Pardon me? Well, I wouldn't mind a break. Is that okay?
The court will be in recess for 15 minutes.
All rise.
The next case is Ivy Whitworth versus SunTrust Banks. Ms. Atwood is here for Whitworth and Mr. Bohm for SunTrust. Ms. Atwood, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for having me today. Ms. Whitworth drove up from Florida to join us, and we appreciate the opportunity. I'd be remiss to go forward without mentioning Andy Scott. I only ever occupied the space of opposing counsel in his life. I did so for a long time. I did so very often. And the only thing I could think through as I was prepping for this argument is good memories. And I hope that when I pass, that's all opposing counsel can think of me. To the task at hand. Your Honors, in order to affirm the district court, you'd have to rule as a matter of law that no reasonable juror could find unlawful retaliatory animus under the following facts that were presented to the court. Number one, that Ms. Whitworth engaged in protected activity. Number two, that the decision maker knew of that protected activity. Number three, that the coworker for whom Ms. Whitworth opposed race discrimination left the company pursuant to a settlement agreement. And four, the defendant fired Ms. Whitworth on the exact same day. Now, the magistrate agreed with our view of the evidence on that, that that should be presented to a jury because a reasonable jury could come to the unlawful retaliatory conclusion. The district court disagreed with us and granted summary judgment. She did so principally and primarily on the idea that Ms. Whitworth did not satisfy the prima facie case, that somehow the third prong of causal connection tripped us up. She did that even though the case law is very clear in the 11th Circuit that the prima facie case burden is not onerous. It's not. It's supposed to be light. But she made it onerous in a couple of different ways. One, by ignoring 11th Circuit precedent. Two, by ignoring some of our facts. And three, by requiring us to prove certain facts at the summary judgment stage, which we are not required to do. Here's how she turns what is not supposed to be an onerous burden at the prima facie case stage into an onerous burden. First, she all but abandons the not wholly unrelated standard and the fact that temporal proximity can serve to create a causal connection. That is well-settled principles within the 11th Circuit. It has not changed. It did not change after Nassar. It is still true.
Well, didn't we apply that standard in Trask versus Veterans Affairs and Jefferson versus Seawin?
Yes, Your Honor, you did. You applied the not wholly unrelated standard there. You applied it in Kidd v. Mando and Davis versus Florida Agency. Our brief on page...
You applied the but-for standard in those cases, didn't we?
The but-for standard absolutely applies at the pretext stage and at the trial stage. To transpose it over onto the prima facie case stage is troublesome. One, it would basically turn it would turn the framework that we've used, McDonnell Douglas, on its head a bit.
You concede that the Nassar but-for causation test applies at summary judgment, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I would say it approves at the pretext stage, not at the prima facie case stage.
You're not disputing that it applies at summary judgment. You're disputing as to where, at what stage it applies.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And that's critical here because the district court dismissed us at the prima facie case stage.
I thought the district court said no matter what stage we're at, you lose.
She's wrong, Your Honor, in all due respect.
Okay,
she's just wrong.
I'm not sure she restricted her reasoning to a prima facie case. I thought she did both, kind of belt and suspenders.
She says it applies across the board, yes, ma'am. And but she dismissed us based on the prima facie case. But let's be sure we all understand this but-for standard, because I think unfortunately the district court maybe conflated some things or misunderstood some things.
The decision. It is not clear whether it applies at the prima facie stage or the but-for stage. Here, whether it is examined in the prima facie stage, the pretext stage, or separately, as its own additional amendment, cannot and has not shown that her protective activity was the but-for cause of her termination. So I'm not sure I agree with you that this, when the district court only did this as a prima facie decision. Well,
she dismissed us primarily based on the prima facie showing.
Okay.
And where I think she misunderstands 11th Circuit precedent on this is that the but-for standard does apply at trial, absolutely. It applies at the pretext stage. And the reason for that is we don't want to dismiss or cases at the prima facie case stage because that burden is supposed to be light.
Suppose I agree with you. What difference does it make? Because she says it's going to come out the same if she applies it at the end.
She did conclude that, Your Honor. And again, with all due respect, the district court was just wrong. She did so because she actually didn't engage in any pretext analysis whatsoever. I think there was half a page where she basically says we didn't provide pretext evidence. And what she does, I think, in the citation or the statement you just read, again, she's requiring us that we prove these things. At summary judgment, I have to provide evidence from which a jury could conclude. And we did that. We provided several avenues of pretext evidence in this case.
Well, that's what I'm interested in seeing.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Where the pretext evidence is. And so in other words, had she not complained, she would not have been fired. So where is the evidence that would support that had she not complained, she would not have been fired?
Thank you, Judge Wilson. We'll do that now. There's quite a bit of it. The first is that Mr. Blythe, who turned into her, and he became in her line of supervisors in August of 2014, okay? Now, she is eventually terminated November 21st of 2014. In that time frame, in that few-month time frame, there is several conversations that Ivy, that Ms. Whitworth has with the legal department, and that's confined to just that time frame. Prior to October of 2014, she's had over a year's worth of conversations with the various people at SunTrust about what she perceives and what Ms. Jackson perceived as race discrimination. Now, Mr. Blythe, if
seems
he's
like
not...
Seems like the best that you have is that she was terminated on the same date that Ms. Jackson's case was settled. Is that true or not true? Is my recollection accurate?
That's definitely a good fact for us from which a jury can infer retaliation.
What do you have other than that? You've got temporal proximity. What do you have other than that?
Because
it's clear, isn't it, from this record, it's clear that she misused her corporate credit card, right?
We have not contested, but whether that was knowingly or willingly, we did not contest
that. And it's clear from the record that 89 people were investigated for that and 73 were terminated.
Yes,
right?
Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
So she doesn't really have any evidence to show that similarly situated individuals were treated differently, does she?
Well, we had the 16 people who weren't terminated, but we don't have to rely solely on comparators.
Or some of those quit under duress or whatever you want to call it.
A few of those, yes, Your Honor.
All right.
We also have in this record evidence that two other people complained about Grace Jackson's non-promotion, and they suffered no adverse action, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Their protected activity was very different. One, it was not straight to the legal department on several occasions. And two, it was not as overt as, listen, I am not going to be a good witness for SunTrust. The tone, the content, and to whom she's complaining makes her protected activity much more higher on the opposition conduct level. But, Your Honor, we have much more evidence of pretext than just comparators, and I want to get to that.
Right.
I'm a little confused about the sense of this. She's not complaining about her own treatment. She's complaining, she's saying, it's either direct or implied, that I'm going to testify if I'm called for Ms. Jackson. And firing her where she would have no reason not to testify for Ms. Jackson, it's not all computing to me. So how is this computing to you?
Well, the case settled. Ms. Jackson's case settled. So there was none. As soon as they retain Ms. Whitworth long enough that Ms. Jackson's case is settled, so there's no need for Ivy Whitworth to be called to testify in that matter. But that's why they retain her through all her protected activity. At least that's what I would argue to
that's
a jury.
Okay, I see the sense of it.
It's access. Okay. It's access right. And persuasion. Evidence of pretext.
So your theory is they keep her thumb on her as long as they needed to.
Yes, ma'am. That's absolutely
okay.
The theory.
All right.
Other evidence of pretext, Judge. First of all, that two different executives testify that credit card misuse is a good go-to justification when we're looking for a reason to fire somebody. Two, and this is critical, Mr. Blythe, who is in the room while the decision is being made to terminate Ivy Whitworth, he is part of those conversations. He is in the loop the whole way. He's cited as the terminating manager on the documents. He is, at a minimum, a decision maker. Withheld exculpatory evidence that both Ms. Ferrero and Mr. Hevner, both the investigator and the teammate relations employee, said could have made a difference.
Did Blythe know about the legal department? Because the district judge said, I don't think he was a decision maker, but if he was, he doesn't know about all this stuff.
He did know, Your Honor, he did know.
You produced evidence that he did know?
Yes, ma'am. First of all, Ms. Hyatt said that she explained to Mr. Blythe in 2013 that Ivy Whitworth was very concerned about what was happening to Grace Jackson and that she had verbalized that.
Okay, and she was concerned in 2013. What else have you got?
I've got that Ivy Whitworth said the same to Mr. Blythe through various points in 2013. I have that in 2014, October, just 3-4 weeks before Ms. Whitworth is terminated, right as Ms. Jackson settles her case, that she sees Mr. Blythe at the water cooler and says, hey, I just got a call from legal about Grace Jackson. Is this going to be a problem? Mr. Blythe admitted that he recalled that conversation, that she brought up Grace Jackson and legal. That's 3 weeks, three short weeks.
So she says that at the water cooler, and that means he's aware of her protected activity.
Yes, ma'am, because it's over a continuum. You cannot look at these isolated incidences in a vacuum. You have to look at a continuous course of dialogue, and Furcron tells us that you can't look at those in isolation. This is over, I think, about 20 months of protected activity. Okay. October is just the last point in time where we know Ms. Whitworth went to Mr. Blythe and raised it with him again. And 3 weeks later, she's terminated.
Thank you, Ms. Atwood. We'll hear from Mr. Boehm.
May it please the court, my name is Ted Boehm, and I'm counsel for the appellee. And I first would just like to say thank you to Eleanor for her comment about Andy. I know it's heartfelt, and I appreciate you saying that. Your Honors, SunTrust issues corporate credit cards to employees subject to certain rules and conditions. And one of those rules is that corporate credit cards may not be used for personal transactions. That's in writing. Employees are warned in writing that they face termination for such misuse. And over the period of several months, Ms. Whitworth's card was used repeatedly for improper personal transactions. It was used 12 times at grocery stores, 4 times at pharmacies, 9 times at gas stations or convenience stores, and most egregiously was used for a $1,000 hotel charge for a wedding in New Orleans that Ms. Whitworth attended with her husband.
Well, I was going to say there are extenuating circumstances, though. It was her husband who used the card and not her, right? And doesn't that make it a little different than everybody else who uses their corporate credit card if she didn't know her husband was using it?
I don't think it does, Your Honor, because Ms. Jessica Ferreira testified that employees have a duty to ensure that their cards are being secured and not misused.
When did the investigation into her credit card use begin?
It starts in, I believe it's in September of 2014. And the way it starts, Your Honor, is the collections department will send emails to employees when their cards are past due and there's an overdue balance. Ms. Whitworth gets one of these emails and is notified that her card is 47 days past due and she owes something like $600. She says, I'll take care of it. She doesn't take care of it. So 3 weeks later, the collections department sends an email to her supervisor Meredith Hyatt, who gets the email and sees that Ms. Whitworth has an overdue balance now of something like $1,200, and it's 67 days past due. Ms. Hyatt has never received one of these notifications before, doesn't know what to do, so she goes to her supervisor, Charlie Blythe. Charlie Blythe, likewise, has never seen one of these before, and he is struck by the amount of the balance here for a recruiter who doesn't travel often. So he forwards it to Jessica Ferrero in the teammate relations department, who in turn gives it to corporate security. And that's the chain of events that led to this surfacing.
So she had started complaining about the Ms. Jackson issue back in 2011.
Yeah.
I believe that's right, Your Honor.
So then the credit card, so she's still employed.
Yes.
2011, 2012, 2013. Toward the end of 2014, September, the information about the credit card abuse comes up, the investigation begins, and then she's terminated November of 2014.
Correct.
I have that timeline
That's
right.
That's correct, Your
So
Honor.
She's been complaining about Ms. Jackson, and other people have complained about Ms. Jackson over the course of several years, and well, she's not terminated.
Well, correct. She has been complaining for several years. Nothing happens to her. Other people have mentioned Ms. Jackson's situation. Nothing has happened to her. But most importantly, Your Honor, Jessica Ferrero never once, she has no knowledge whatsoever about the fact that Ivy Whitworth has spoken up for Grace Jackson. And, Your Honor, a Title VII plaintiff has to show that the decision maker is aware of the protected activity in order to set forth a prima facie case of retaliation.
And there, you don't think there's any issue of fact as to who the decision maker was? Because the district judge and the magistrate judge seem to be differing on that point of view.
I think they do differ on that, but I think the district judge is right on this. There was possibly a weak issue of fact, but, Your Honor, there is an email that is sent from Charlie Blythe to Jessica Ferrero on November 21 during the phone call that culminates in Ms. Whitworth's termination. And this is referenced on page 19 of Judge Evans' opinion. And it's found in the district court docket below at docket entry 7512, page 144. And the subject of the email sent by Blythe to Ferrero is, "Oh Lord, now what?" And you have to remember, at this point in time, they're on a call, and Ms. Whitworth is saying that her husband had been using the corporate credit card. And Charlie Blythe says, "Here we go. Do we need to dig more? ? Like more investigating? ? And Jessica Ferrero answers, no, she's being terminated. She knew or should have known he was using it, and she failed to report it. And, Your Honor, I don't think any reasonable juror could look at this piece of evidence and conclude that anyone other than Jessica Ferrero made the discharge decision. We're getting a real-time look into these two individuals' minds.
But it was Blythe who took the lead in contacting Whitworth for the termination call. He drafted the email saying that she'd been terminated before the termination took place. His name was listed as the terminating manager on the documents that SunTrust provided in response to Whitworth's request for unemployment benefits. Couldn't a jury look at all of that and say Blythe was the decision maker?
I think the fact that he set up the phone call does not indicate one way or another who made the decision. He explained that those forms, and Ms. Ferrero explained that those two forms, which were generated, they're auto-populated after the termination, that although it says he's the terminating manager, what that is meant to convey is that he's the manager of the individual who's being terminated.
All right, but there's conflicting evidence in there about who the decision maker is, and the district judge resolved a conflict in the evidence, didn't he? Didn't she?
Well, there has to be more than weak evidence, Your Honor. Weak evidence does not preclude summary judgment. There must be enough of a showing that a reasonable juror conclude that there is a question here. And I don't think that there is in light of this email, Your Honor. And every single witness who testified in this case said that Jessica Ferrero made the decision. And Ms. Whitworth admits Ferrero is the person who told her she's being fired.
Blythe had the power to fire Ms. Whitworth.
That's
correct.
Not for this violation. He actually testified that when it comes to a policy violation of this sort, he doesn't have the authority to make that decision. It's out of his hands. But Your Honor, even if Charlie Blythe is the decision maker here, and I think that it goes against the mass weight of the evidence. He is not aware of any protected activity that occurs.
And that's what the district judge concludes. He says Blythe wasn't the decision maker. Even if he was not aware of the alleged protective activity that occurred in 2014, which the judge thinks is within temporal proximity.
Right. Your Honor, this court has said that a three-month gap is clearly too attenuated to satisfy causation. So the 2013 conversation in which someone actually or allegedly tells Blythe about Ms. Whitworth's protected activity, that's clearly too attenuated.
So she says we have in the 2014, hey, you still know about it because at the water cooler, she says, do I have to be concerned about this call from legal?
And what was said at that very brief water cooler conversation, I think, is very critical here. All Ms. Whitworth says is, I get a call from the SunTrust legal department about Grace Jackson. Is it going to be a problem? Her first line supervisor said, hey, this isn't the time or place for that conversation. That's it. That's the entirety of the conversation. There's no mention of race discrimination, no mention of opposition conduct. There's no mention of Ms. Whitworth's belief that Grace Jackson had been mistreated. That is simply not Title VII protected activity, Your Honor. So the only arguable protected activity that Charlie Blythe knows about occurred at least 13 months before the discharge, if not longer. So that's another reason why causation can't be satisfied.
Well, why can't it be satisfied by temporal proximity? That's a factor that we said can support pretext. And is it just a coincidence that she was terminated on the same day that Jackson's case was settled?
It is a coincidence, Your Honor. I mean, and there is no close temporal proximity here.
Why can't she argue to the jury that it's not a coincidence? It was just a 30-minute telephone call. Nobody gave her copies of her credit card statements.
Your Honor, even if that final stage of the investigation wasn't executed flawlessly, that doesn't change certain facts. It doesn't change the fact that her card was used repeatedly in violation of bank policy. It doesn't change the fact that 89 individuals within the relevant time period were investigated for this same sort of misconduct, and 73 were terminated. She is treated exactly the same as the overwhelming majority of comparators here, Your Honor. And Your Honor, Nassar comes into play at pretext as well. And this court has said that a plaintiff under Nassar must show that they would not have been fired if they had not engaged in the protected activity. And frankly, you cannot show. So in other words, Ms. Whitworth must show that she would not have been fired for corporate credit card misuse if she had not spoken out on behalf of Grace Jackson. But Your Honor, SunTrust terminated 73 employees for this very same misconduct. I think that rules out any possibility of satisfying the but-for Nassar standard.
Okay.
In the briefing, I understood that Ms. Whitworth was arguing that Nassar didn't apply to the jury stage. So I'm glad that we are now all on the same page that it does apply at pretext. And in light of the fact that we have an email, a real-time email showing these two individuals' minds, one person is saying, hey, should we slow this down? Do we need to investigate more? The other person says, no, she's being fired. I think that shows who the decision maker was. The fact that that the bank has terminated the overwhelming majority of comparators who engaged in this very same misconduct also shows that there is no sufficient evidence to show pretext for retaliation. And if there's no further questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you.
Ms. Whitworth does have to show that SunTrust would not have terminated her had she not engaged in the protected activity with everything else being the same. There is an issue of fact, and there's a lot of evidence saying Blythe was the decision maker. And you're right, the district court just snatched that. She made the decision herself. And that's troublesome because if Blythe is a decision maker, the decision maker, or someone affecting the decision under Staub versus Proctor, he's the one holding, like my mama used to say, he's just sitting in wait like a spider. He's sitting there withholding exculpatory information about the FMLA leave that she was on for an extended basis. She was very sick. About the marital problems that she had encountered during this time. And also about the fact that she had actually placed non-reimbursable expenses on the credit card with Blythe's knowledge. He didn't say a word. And he's the one that's heard her over and over and over again, in addition to the legal department, for 20 months. Complaining on behalf of Grace Jackson. Why wasn't she promoted? Why wasn't I allowed to post this internally? I don't think she's being treated fairly. She certainly doesn't think she's being treated fairly. And oh, yes, if you need me to testify on your behalf, it won't happen. Good to know. We'll keep you here until we settle the case. That's the theory I'm going to give the jury, and I've got the facts to support it. But I've been deprived of the opportunity to do so because Judge Evans ruled on facts in dispute. If I can't rely on a document issued by SunTrust that they know who their terminating manager is, we've gone too far.
What if we assume, just for the sake of argument, that Blythe is the decision maker? She complained to him about Grace Jackson a year prior to her termination, and then the water cooler conversation, as it has been relayed, doesn't indicate to me that there's protected conduct. Tell me how there's protected conduct in that water cooler conversation.
Well, I think we do have to look at the course of her protected activity, which does include talking directly with Blythe and explaining just what I've said. That what's going on with Grace? Couldn't post this internally. Grace is concerned about this. I don't blame her. It doesn't look like she's been treated fairly. These are the conversations. I'm not sure she just, I think in the record there's more than one with Blythe. I know Hyatt, forgive me, it's not Hyatt, it's one of her coworkers, has the same conversation she's mentioned in our brief, of course, has the same conversation with Blythe. Hey, Ivy's really worried about this. She has a very extended conversation with Blythe about this. Now, it only matters from Blythe's perspective because he doesn't become her supervisor until August of 2014. He tells Ferrero in September of 2014, uh-oh, legal's calling Ivy. Should I be concerned? Ferrero says no. But then there's the water cooler in October. He knows exactly what she's talking about. He's had this conversation with her. They've called me about Grace Jackson. Legal has called me. Is this going to be a problem? And the way to make it not a problem is to, you know, settle the case with Miss Jackson, and we don't need you anymore, Amy. I appreciate your time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. And the court will be in recess until 8:30 tomorrow morning.
All right. I gotta collect my junk.